This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
We've got the monarch, who wears a 16-tine crown made from recycled leather and red deer antlers. So there's 16 points to this, like the monarch of the glen.
This is a beautiful, beautiful costume, and that's the deer skin that you're using.
Yeah, so
there.
This is deer hide from an estate in Fife, which has been tanned naturally with bark. I can't remember which bark it was now, by a local tanner in Fife. And this is a cod piece made from deer hide as well, with some gold furniture tassels hanging there.
It's not often you see a cod piece these days, Hannah.
No, there's a number of cod pieces. Well, there's 3 cod pieces and 1 sporran in this show. And this is sequins, gold sequins.
Yeah. The deer fascination, tell me about that.
I am interested in how our relationship with deer across cultures constructs ideas of wilderness. So wilderness being an imaginary landscape that's very different to the actual damaged ecologies that are of now. So I've been researching dances from around the world, traditional dances from around the world, that are mimetic of deer, so they imitate the movements of deer, looking at how these ideas of wilderness are kind of encoded in the dances, and then also how these dances encode particular forms of masculinity. They're all performed by men traditionally, and these forms of masculinity draw on the behaviours and the gestures of male deer. So from the kind of bravado and display of the stag to the kind of capering of the fawn and the, you know, this real alertness of the male deer. Basically, in this work, I'm looking at the interconnections between the crisis of ecology and the crisis of masculinity, and how they're linked. I've also been looking a lot at traditional hunting practices. A lot of the dances have their origins in hunting practices, so rituals around hunting. So I was spending a lot of time up at Trees for Life in Dundragon, going out with the stalker there and learning about the practice of stalking, and actually began to notice how much the stalker almost becomes like the deer in his alertness and his posture even, you know, like bending from the torso, getting lower and lower into the ground. I guess I've begun to think about the work as a life crisis ritual for a damaged planet. And there are 5 characters. There's the monarch, who we're looking at just now, the warrior, the young buck, the fool and his hobby stag, and the old sage.
Why do you think it is that men in particular have such a historical fascination with deer?
I think that it's a cultural construction. I think there's a romanticisation around the hunt, and the hunt being kind of a becoming a sport or trophy hunting, but really in Scotland in particular, there's an overpopulation of deer, so there are no predators, for one, because they were hunted out, and secondly, we cut down all the trees. But now the trees can't grow because the deer eat them all. But we continue to have this overpopulation of deer because we don't have any predators, but also because it supports the hunting economy. So basically, quite wealthy men, more often than not, come up to Scotland, they pay to go out in a Land Rover, point and shoot, and then carry home their trophy.
And why you, as a female, and I know that you live in the city, artist, why are you so interested in this particular subject? Because it's a very hot topic, certainly within rural Scotland at the moment, the whole thing and the balance and how we go about managing the land and the notion of rewilding.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big question. Why, as a female, through my experiences of particular performances of masculinity that I have experienced as a woman, I have been interested in how those forms of masculinity are encoded in these cultural practices of stalking and then also in these dances. So that's from my perspective in my body and my experiences in the world. It's all connected. Our climate is connected through the world. The furthest I've been to research is in Mexico and Arizona in the Sonora Desert. So I was looking at a dance of the Yaqui tribe, who are a tribe originally from the Sonora Desert in Mexico, but a lot of the community were forced to migrate north of the border initially due to persecution by the Mexican government. I mean, the Sonoran Desert is really under threat from climate change, from climate breakdown, and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter there. I've also been looking at the Abbots Bromley Horn Dance, which is a village. So Abbots Bromley is a village in Staffordshire in England. Then the Highland Fling in Scotland.
Yeah, I never even thought about the Highland Fling in that way before.
Okay, so it's actually a little bit of fake lore. So there is a story that the Highland Fling is imitative of the stag rut, you know, with the hands held aloft like antlers.
Like antlers.
Uh-huh. But I have discovered through my research that the dance is actually choreographed by a lowlander as a kind of caricature of a Highland savage, you know, like this wild man. And this dance has become encoded in Scottish culture as, you know, the dance of Scotland. In this work, I'm unpicking some of these layers of cultural construction and the way that over time things become romanticised. And I think our relationship with the deer is really, in Scotland, part of that romanticisation.
These costumes are amazing. Did you make them yourself?
So I designed all of them, and then actually my girlfriend Lydia Honeybone constructed a lot of the kind of base layers, and then I did a lot of the embellishment. For example, this is covered in sequins. We collaborated on the cod pieces. That was fun.
I bet.
The monarch's cod piece is quite huge. The monarch's a little bit Henry VIII-esque.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm getting that vibe. Yeah, because there's a slight portliness to
it. Yeah, he's a little bit podgy. I had to cover myself in padding to wear this costume. The warrior's costume, this is a brass chest plate, and it's strapped on the back with a recycled leather harness. And then these are actually Sika deer antlers that he wears as spears coming out of his shoulders. And these antlers are from Trees for Life up at Dundregan. Obviously, Sika are from Asia. They were an introduced species. So in the British Isles, a lot of deer species were introduced as part of the king's hunting ground. And that's had a really big impact on the ecology of the woodlands in the British Isles.
People will not be able to avoid hearing the sounds in the background.
The one that you just heard, that's the fool So the fool is over here. He's covered in ribbons. He's got a little codpiece. That's a bell. The fool carries a hobby stag, which is basically the brush of a broom turned upside down, and the holes in the front are his eyes. And then he's got these huge red deer antlers attached to the broom. And I've kind of nicknamed the hobby stag Maurice. Actually, Lydia nicknamed the hobby stag Maurice. And Maurice, he really wants to fight with all the other characters, so he's constantly looking to fight. The broom is testosterone fueled, but the fool who carries the broom, he's quite scared. He doesn't want to fight, and so there's this tension set up between what society expects from kind of male bravado to this slightly wary, sensitive soul.
We've got the one here that actually has the gun.
Yeah, so this is the young buck. He's trigger happy and cocksure. He's a young buck, so he's a spiker. He is on the lookout for a fight. He's on the lookout for a harem. He doesn't have his own harem yet. The way that we talk about deer, the harem is the group of hinds that the stag want to say owns, but it shouldn't be owns. But I feel like the language around deer terminology is also revealing about culture and gender relations.
Yes, and the way that they behave.
Yes. Yeah. So the young buck, he's got a slightly smaller codpiece to the monarch, and he's got smaller tassels as well. And these tweed trousers, they were actually my mother's trousers. My mother's Finnish, but she made these trousers in the 1970s, and they've been customised into kind of these
plus
breeches.
Plus fours, yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah, brilliant.
The headpiece is made from a red deer frontlet, and it's inspired by a Mesolithic headdress. So Star Car is a site in North Yorkshire. It's a Mesolithic site, so Middle Stone Age. The archaeologists discovered 21 red deer frontlets that were probably used within rituals, within hunting rituals. The wearer dresses as a deer wearing these frontlets and harnesses the qualities of the animal in action through ritual. This one is the old sage. This is also ribbon tassels, white ribbon tassels on a kind of grey top and bottom. He's like the wild heart of the forest, but he's also the ghost of a hunter, a little bit like Herne the Hunter. In England, there's this mythology around this ghost that haunts the woods, who was hung for stalking a deer without the king's permission. So I was interested in that story. But in this, in the work that I've made, the old sage, he's a ghost. So he sort of gradually appears. He's translucent at first. And nobody except for the fool can see him. He witnesses everything that's going on. He relives his death, because all of these characters actually kill each other. But he doesn't do anything. He witnesses it, but he doesn't step in to make any changes. All of the characters, there's a complexity to them. Yeah. They're not just, you are good and you are evil.
Life isn't like that, yeah. Is it?
But this is a white-tailed deer skull from Arizona.
Oh, and it's got this lovely bleached effect, doesn't it?
Yes, I actually found that with the head, with the flesh and the hide on it, and I put it in a tree, and then a couple of years later...
It came back?
Yes!
Wow!
Yeah. These are strange vintage deer hoofs that he wears
tiny.
On his wrist. They are tiny, and I have absolutely no idea what they were used for.
Where did you find them?
They were in a charity shop, like a vintage shop.
Yeah, because people used to wear a lot of animal, didn't they?
They did, yeah. And I'm a vegan.
Oh, right.
So this has been challenging
yes.
for me. in terms of my own politics around deer stalking in Scotland, I think that we need to cull the deer, as much as I also believe that animals, we are animals, but more than human animals, are sentient beings. I also think that we have a responsibility to the ecology, because we're the ones that have imposed and damaged the ecology, so we have a responsibility. So I think, yes, let's introduce lynx and let's introduce wolves in the long run.
So you're quite happy for deer to be culled in order for people, local people, to eat them?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that would be great. If you're going to eat meat, let's not have cows. Let's not eat the cows and the pigs and the sheep. Let's eat the deer. Although I don't want to eat the deer.
No, that's fine, but that's your choice.
Yeah.
Can we step behind the curtain? Because there's a very dramatic, thick, theatrical-type curtain.
Welcome to the other world.
Through we go. Oh, wow. And we're into a dark space.
Yeah.
So dark I can't actually even see where you are to point the microphone.
Your eyes will adjust. Oops, sorry.
She banged into the microphone. So this is the film. This is the work.
This and is the film.
This is you.
This is me.
All costumed up.
This is me as the warrior.
And you are fully bearded up.
I am bearded up. That's the warrior playing his horn. And then opposite is the monarch displaying. So the monarch has this very low call. It's the warrior's high call. And then on this side is the buck, and he's tapping and displaying his guns. And that's his breath.
You are unrecognizable in these costumes, but mainly because of your gestures, your stance.
So I worked really closely with two collaborators. Oh, that's the fool just coming in.
With his crazy broom.
With his broom, with Maurice, the hobby stag. He's battling with his hobby stag there. It's quite exhausting for him.
And what about the sound? This is you as well.
Yeah, so... initially I worked on developing the characters in close collaboration with Peter McMaster, who's a performance artist based in just outside of Glasgow, and with Will Dickey, who is a performance artist and dancer based in Liverpool. And we spent time with Pete. I worked on the kind of dramaturgy of the piece and the kind of overall journey. And with Will, began to develop a kind of movement language for each character. So that's why it really helps to define each character. And I had to really understand that in my body, and through that process I developed these different voices for each character. You can hear the warrior and the fool. That's kind of his internal sound.
And it's a very simple visual experience, because it's the deer, the different characters, you playing them just on a black backdrop.
Yeah, so these characters were filmed one by one in the University of Glasgow's theatre, which is has a black curtain and a black floor. And I worked with a director of photography called Andrew Begg, who lit everything beautifully and then edited it with... an Edinburgh-based filmmaker called Laura Carrera, and we worked to really make the blacks very black. So it allows yourself and other people in the audience to imagine what this wilderness world is for them. So this
so
you is without can then, a location.
Yeah, so you could impose the hills or whatever in your own mind on the back of that.
maybe this is in Scotland, maybe this is in Mexico, maybe this is in Japan.
Because deer are widely hunted throughout the world.
They are, and there are deer dances all around the world where the deer are. People have created dances around them. This next bit is the deer dance.
And when people come to see this exhibition, they will do what we've done and seen the costumes first and then come in here.
Yeah.
So what's happening here?
It's cross-cutting quite rapidly between the different characters across the two screens. So they're facing each other and they're beginning to do a parallel walk, which deer actually do. So stags will do a parallel walk before they fight one another. And these steps are inspired by the Yaki deer dance steps. So now there's a step, tap, step, tap, step, tap, step, tap, hop, step, tap, hop, step, tap, hop, step, tap, hop, step, tap, and so on. And soon... they come to face one another. And prepare for something akin to the Highland Fling.
And off they go.
Yeah,
with that familiar
jumping
dance.
Up and down. It was actually quite challenging in some of these costumes to do the fling, especially the warrior, because the warrior wears this big brass chest with bullets, and so the bullets were kind of clanging onto the chest. It was painful sometimes. And also doing the fling holding a broom with really heavy antlers is quite challenging too.
So it was quite a physical piece of work for you to do then.
Absolutely. It was... yes, it was really exhausting, but also energising.
Why was it energising for you?
I think for me it was quite a cathartic thing to do, to really engage with these characters and try and understand them from the inside. But also, well, we'll come to it in a minute, but they're doing a little bit of the Abbott's Brumley horn dance where they're going back and forth as if they're fighting. And now they are beginning to draw their weapons. So on this side, the warrior's drawing his spear. Oh, there's the buck getting his gun out. The fool is holding Maurice up. And the monarch is holding his crown towards the sage who has just opened his eyes. And now it's just cut to a red curtain.
Blood?
Yes. It's blood and the last exhale of the characters. And that sound, that ringing, I guess it's a little bit like the ringing in your ears after a cacophony. And now the characters are all lying one by one in poses with red ribbon.
Slain.
Dead. Slain. The ribbons slowly move, like the blood coming out of the warrior's neck there. And the monarch looks like a baby. The buck has blood coming out of his crotch area. And the fool has blood coming out of his mouth. And now the bodies have disappeared, and all you can see is the costumes on the floor, or just suspended in space. Now you see just me in my underwear. And slowly you see the costumes being constructed on my body. So it's gradually this assemblage of these different aspects that are embedded in the costume.
And did you feel that when you were costuming up? Did you feel a change as you added on the layers?
Yeah, that was a really conscious part of the process. So Peter McMaster was there during the filming and he talked me through this process of becoming. So it was like this process of becoming with deer and becoming these strange stag men hybrids and slowly connecting with the characters.
Oh, we've got more.
Yeah, there's more. We can go through this. Oh. There's three sections to this exhibition. Oh. So come through into the white space.
Wow, and that
really
it's an assault on the eyes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Coming out after the darkness.
Yeah.
So what do we have here?
So these are 14 visual scores. So they're notations for the three dances that I have been researching. So they notate the way the feet fall on the ground, but replace human footprints with deer tracks. And the Highland Fling is represented by the tracks of the red deer, the Abbots Bromley by the tracks of reindeer, because the Abbots Bromley horn dance, the six deer dancers carry these wooden stag heads that have reindeer antlers that have been carbon dated to the 11th century.
Where did they get the reindeer antlers from?
It's unknown. It's possible that they used other kinds of antlers, but then because reindeer antlers are very big, so maybe they traded them, maybe from the Norse that came from the Vikings. But they are really important to the community. They are kept in the local church, and then once a year this dance is performed, and the dancers, which six deer dancers, a bowman, a hobby horse, Maid Marian and Fool, they go round the village, the edges of the village, and they do this dance from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m, slowly just getting more and more drunk through the day.
Right.
And it's part of the ritual involves going to the manor where they perform this dance, and then the landowners come out and kind of shake everyone's hand, and it's probably the trace of a hunting ritual where they're giving thanks to the landowning class. So the peasant's going to say thank you.
Doff their cap.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then these three on the end here, they're the Yaqui deer dance. So I worked with a tradition bearer in Arizona called Felipe Molina. He is a deer singer and a translator.
A deer singer?
Yeah, so in the Yaqui deer dance, the deer dancer is one part of a much bigger ceremony. And the deer dance section is accompanied by three musicians who sing these incredible songs that bring the wilderness world to life. And he begins as a young fawn, and throughout the ritual, throughout the night, he becomes a kind of virile male deer before predicting his own death, and he dies. So it's a blend of indigenous beliefs with Catholicism, because the Yaqui took on aspects of Catholicism brought by the Jesuits. I worked with Felipe, but also with a deer dancer from Mexico called Carlos, who came up from the Yaqui homeland to the border, and we worked together to try to understand some of the relationships between deer movement and the dance. So this is the Highland Fling arm positions. And as you can see, there's antlers facing downwards, which
down
is like the first position
in
Highland dancing, and then second position where one's down and one's up, and third position like the kind of iconic Highland Fling third position.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Thank you. Some of these, you will notice, are actually gold foiled, which it just happens that foil also means animal track.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Me neither until I started researching. But so these gold foiled tracks are the tracks that have inspired the deer dance section of the film.
How did you... I mean, there's so much to this. you've obviously done so much research. How did you manage to narrow it down?
I mean, I love researching. I learn by researching. I learn about the world and about things and people and culture and ecology. And so I like to start big and then go through a process of distilling, or like brewing a really strong cup of tea.
Yeah.
And then just listen to what the right things are, and also find the right collaborators as well. I had the opportunity of working slowly with this project, and I was supported as well. So I got an attachment. I was really lucky to be awarded an attachment with Magnetic North Theatre, and they gave me the resources to spend time slowly researching the dances, which are very seasonal, and also the deer are seasonal, obviously. And then being able to work with tradition bearers. So obviously I spoke about Felipe and Carlos with the Yaqui deer dance. I worked with a teacher, now my friend Sandra Robertson, who I took lessons with for the Highland Fling. And then I participated in the Abbots Bromley horn dance
Were they okay about you doing that as a
Absolutely,
female?
Absolutely, yeah. So they open up the dance now through the day. I think partly just to have a wee break. It's such a shared activity for the community, and yeah, they're very happy, very open people. I also spent time with a tradition bearer and historian called Jack Brown, who's in his 90s now, to look at the score with him.
And what did you learn from this?
That's a massive question.
If you could distill it down, as you do with everything as an artist.
I learned that there's a link between our constructed ideas of masculinity and our constructed ideas of wilderness. And I think those two things are so inextricably linked. And I feel like these constructions are so much to do with our obsession with binaries. And I think if we could just go beyond those boxes, then maybe we could come to think about things differently, but it might be too late. So that's why I was thinking about this as a life crisis ritual. You know, the characters, they sit between male and female. There's this blend between human, animal. If somehow we can go beyond thinking about these binaries, maybe there's possibility to make more of a psychological change, which would have an impact on how we become with our environment.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.